On another exciting entry of Animation Deliberation, we're tackling a movie, another movie. It is My Hero Academia World Heroes Mission. So we're going to get right into that after some ads we have no control over. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah.
Always plus ultra with the song.
Thank you. Go beyond plus ultra is what we do here. All right, folks. Well, welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. Normally, we discuss action animated series and cartoons, but I am excited to be tackling a movie that's out in theaters right now. And to do that, well, of course, I am Jay Scotty, your host. To do that, I am joined by the person that I started this podcast with that has introduced me to a number of great animated shows, including My Hero Academia. What is up, Zuhair? How's it going?
It's going pretty good. It's dark outside already, which means that when I complain about being tired, it's a little more justified. It's like, it's dark out. I have a right to be tired. So there's the positive of daylight savings. Aside from that, I'm doing well. Yeah. I think I have a perfect record on shows that I've recommended that you've watched and liked.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I don't think I've given a bad recommendation yet. I'm going to toot my own horn there.
No, go ahead and toot that horn. You've got a stellar track record so far. I think the only ones, and I'm saying this with a caveat because I did enjoy MODOK for the most part, but I know the reception of that one was a little mixed, and that was totally my idea. I was the one that was excited about that.
That was when I watched it. I was like, oh, we're gonna gasp about this, aren't we?
I think that was everybody, because Jeff was initially supposed to join us for that too, and I think that was his response as well. That's Jeff Randall of the MCU cast for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, for anybody that's a first-time listener here. Hopefully we've got some people, you know, that are checking us out because we're tackling My Hero Academia. Now, before we get into the nitty gritty, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. We've been bringing up the 5-star reviews that we've been getting, and we've got a couple of those queued up. Some ones that I'm excited to share with the listeners. So Zuhair, you've got those pulled up for us, right?
Yeah. Appreciate everybody who sends these in, and we have so many to go through that we're going to read a couple today. So woo-hoo. Thanks for writing in, everybody. Going to start off with GJN27, caption being best new addition. This is the absolute best new addition to the Stranded Panda family. Both the host and guest are fantastically well-informed and knowledgeable on the topics discussed, and has opened my eyes to much more about the animation styles and what goes into creating these animations, and the work needed by the animators. Can't wait for Invincible Season 2 to hear their recaps.
Awesome. It's not animated, but those kind words make me want to respond like Mike Myers from Wayne's World. Just, we are not worthy. yeah, truly kind words that warm my heart and make me excited to continue to do this cast. So thank you.
We're happy you're happy.
Yeah.
And the next one, 5-star awesome by Drew Gretch.
I think it's Gretch.
Forgive me if I said that wrong. I'm going to go with Gretch. The Invincible coverage has been absolutely fantastic. Big fan of Marvel and Star Wars, not necessarily in that order. And I love their deep dives into Bad Batch, MODOK, and What If. I'm glad you enjoyed our MODOK coverage.
Yeah, speaking of.
Bad Batch set a bar for me.
Yeah.
It set a bar.
For sure. Actually, on the subject matter of Bad Batch, it's kind of a nice time to bring up Star Trek Prodigy. I went ahead and checked out the first episode of that show on Paramount Plus, and I definitely got some Bad Batch vibes. I felt like with the success of Bad Batch for Star Wars, Star Trek was like, oh, we need to do our own kind of version of that. And I do think it's a little more geared towards a younger audience by focusing on adolescent characters, but we're not going to cover that show specifically here just because we've got so much content. But I do encourage everybody to check out the Star Trek Universe podcast. Matt Carroll and David C. Robertson do that show, and it's a part of the Stranded Panda Network here. So if you're a fan of Star Trek and interested in that animated series, I know we got some feedback requesting that we cover that show. Go check them out. I can't encourage you enough to do that.
Because I've never seen anything Star Trek, so you don't want to hear anything from me. I feel like I'm going to piss a lot of people off if I give that a shot.
Yeah.
But also, I heard today that T-Mobile customers can get Paramount Plus for free for a year, if you already have their service.
Well, that's a nice offer.
So if you're a T-Mobile customer, look into that if you're running out of content to watch, because I kind of want to do the iCarly reboot more than anything.
Nice. Okay.
Gladly admit. It's the only thing I know that's on there.
That's funny. I know I didn't watch too much iCarly just because it was a little bit after my time, but I definitely watched a fair amount of Drake and Josh. I know Drake Bell, unfortunately, has been in the headlines for not the greatest reasons, but I definitely have love for that Nickelodeon stuff. But that being said, with my little bit of exposure with the Paramount Plus app, it was one of the worst apps I've ever used. So you do check it out and want to send them some feedback, hopefully they can do something to optimize that app and make it a little more functional. But that's all I'll say about that.
You know, Drake Bell voiced, I think it was Ultimate Spider-Man on one of the Disney
XD. Oh, yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah, I think I did.
Like, man, this voice is killing me. Whose is it?
Okay. And I know on the other side of things, as far as like Disney series goes, Boy Meets World, Will Friedle, he had a long running, well, not super long running, but he was on Kim Possible as Ron Stoppable. But then he went on to voice Star-Lord in a couple of the Marvel series. I think it might have been in one of those... Spider-Man series and maybe like Hulk, Agents of Smash or something like that. But yeah,
interesting.
Nice to hear his voice. But we are not here to discuss Marvel this time around. We're not even here to discuss DC this time around. But we are discussing Heroes. And those are...
Talking about American content.
Yeah. Yeah, so it is My Hero Academia, World's Hero Mission. And this is the... third theatrically released film for this anime series. And before we talk about the film forthright, and I don't know how long a conversation that's actually going to be because we kind of talked off air. It's a fairly simple story. I think it clocks in at like an hour 37, if I remember correctly. Okay, yeah, so sounds about right there. So before we do that, let's just talk about the series a little bit. How you got introduced to it, some of your favorite characters, how much of it you've seen. Do you watch the sub? Do you watch the dub? So because you were the one that kind of encouraged me to check the show out and introduced it to me in the first place, I will let you take the floor.
I'm going to mix in a couple of things here.
Yeah.
First off, I think I started watching the series 3 years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago.
Okay.
Because I remember binging the first 3 seasons. Altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of those things where it's like you see the memes on Facebook, you see people talk about how good it is, you have friends always tell you, you started it. so that's what it takes for me to get to an anime started, because there's just so many that you never know like what's mainstream.
No doubt.
But My Hero Academia is on my Mount Rushmore of anime. So you have Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, Demon Slayer, and My Hero Academia currently.
Sure.
So that's how high I hold it. That being said, where was I going with that? I want to hear what your Mount Rushmore is. So if you're an anime fan and you like more than four animes, send us an email.
Yeah.
And let us know what your four are, because I'm very curious of what people's rankings like that are.
Yeah. AnimationDeliberationPodcast@gmail.com is where you can send your anime Mount Rushmore. And we also did just, I made an Instagram for Animation Deliberation. So that's just simply Animation Deliberation. You can also hit us up there as well as the Twitter.
Do we want to read off the people who emailed us back last week with their theater experience?
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot to do that. We just kind of moved on from the reviews right into the My Hero Academia stuff. But yeah, this is a good time to kind of address that while we're talking about where to hit us up. We did put the prompt out at the end of the last episode just to kind of test everybody out to see who listens till the end. We had the question or the prompt to tell us what the first animated feature that you got to see in theaters was. I don't know why the grammar sounds wrong to me there, but I think it makes sense. We did have a couple of people respond to us, so One of those being the esteemed Haley Hobbs, who has appeared on the show.
The esteemed Haley Hobbs says, I couldn't remember, but when Jay Scotty said Pagemaster, that definitely sparked a memory, so I'll say that. And then she winked and stuck her tongue out at us.
Yeah. Sparking a memory, I have to imagine, is kind of intentional because she is the co-host of Spark. Yeah.
Stranded Panda, a reading collective.
Source Page is a reading collective.
I'm so tired. I'm blaming Daylight Savings.
It's all good.
The next one, my good friend TJ Stafford.
TJ.
Oh, and P.S., my first animated theater experience was Batman, Mask of the Phantasm. Probably explains a few things about the trajectory of my life. To this day, it's my favorite on-screen Batman story ever.
Rightly so, yeah. So, yeah, Mask of the Phantasm came out in 93, I want to say. So,
I looked it up. Why didn't I look up the release date? I just went straight to images.
There's a strong possibility that might have been one of the first ones for me as well. I just have the most vivid memories of Pagemaster as well. But Mask of the Phantasm is an excellent, excellent Batman story, right up there with some of the live action ones. So, yeah, great call there, TJ. If anybody has not, for some reason, revisited the Mask of the Phantasm in a while, definitely encourage you to do so.
December 25th,
1993. There we go. I was just a wee 3 year old, almost 4 year old.
That was a few months.
Yeah.
So yeah, back to animated stuff that we've seen in theaters in this year, 2021. Yeah, this is the third movie. I ranked them in the order that they came out. The first one was amazing.
Okay.
The second one wasn't too bad, and this one was whelmed.
And
without spoiling anything, this one had the same problem that the second movie had, where it's like, I don't like invincible villains.
Okay.
And that's one of the things I appreciate about the show, is that every hero's power has a weakness and nobody is substantially stronger than anybody else. Like, heroes and villains always go toe-to-toe.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the cliche of we need everyone's power to come together to do this and this and that. Like, it's like, no, everyone's got their limits. Everyone's got their issues. So this is the second time they threw a villain that kind of hit too many cliches that it just wasn't a fan of.
I think that's a fair critique while we're kind of in non-spoilery territory. Yeah. So you mentioned the first two ones that were released now. As far as the order goes, it was two heroes, and then Heroes Rising, and now World's Hero Mission. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, and then I'm vaguely familiar with the plot of one of them. I know because in the anime, they kind of, I can't remember which season it is, but they kind of make the mention of the fact that All Might at one point in time had an American sidekick. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, sets it up that they might be making a trip to America to visit that guy and his daughter. So was that the first one that came out, I imagine?
Yeah, that's the only one that could actually really be canon if it wanted to be.
Okay.
It didn't deviate too much away from the story, and there wasn't anything in it that set the path off. Whereas big things happened in this one and the second one where it was no, that doesn't make sense in the story at all. It looked cool. It doesn't make sense at all. So the first one was the only one that was very cohesive.
Okay.
And it is also, fun fact, the only time that you see Midoriya and All Might fight together.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, because thinking back on it, I can only think of one instance where, they weren't fighting side by side, but Izuku kind of...
They were on the battlefield at the same time. That's about it.
Yeah, I was thinking of the fight with All for One, or... Is it One for All? I feel like I always invert those. It's one is the power,
the
and then one is the
cocky one is All for One.
Okay,
that's how I think of it. It's All for One.
One individual.
I want everything.
I take all for me. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I kind of put that in my head every time if I get confused.
That makes sense. Yeah. And then just while we're kind of talking about where these films kind of lie in the continuity and where they take place, I for myself have seen through season 4. So with this film, I do think there were some things that address some things that took place in season five that I scratched my head a little bit, but I kind of just rolled with it. Chiefly, I'll just say it looks like Midoriya has a new power, kind of like that intangible black whip that he tends to use that effectively makes him Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's actually called Black Whip.
Oh, interesting. Okay. It kind of reminded me of Tokuyami's Dark Shadow.
Yeah.
In that way. It's like it's almost like a shadow that gets emitted from him. So there was that. And then I think the only other thing that kind of like stood out to me is the fact that Bakugo and Midoriya are a part of Endeavor's hero agency for their hero studies, it appears, where I don't think that was the case beforehand. I think it was just Todoroki.
Yep. I won't go too much into the origin of Black Whip.
Okay.
Like, there's a whole arc on it, so it's like when you watch it, like you'll learn, because they explained very well. There's a lot of lore into One for All's power set that's never been discovered before. So there's an arc that talks about breaking down One for All. So when you watch it, that'll make all of that very clear.
Okay.
In regards to the three of them, yeah, all I'll say is that they needed an agency to work with, and Todoroki was like, we can work for my dad if you want.
Okay.
Not going to break down the intent and what happens in this and that, but like that's just something. Yeah, we have heroes that are working for different agencies, just like when they were doing the internship and the work study stuff.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's almost like these guys are in college. It doesn't seem like a high school thing.
Yeah, for sure. That's very true. I guess this is just a world where your education and career are very much fast-tracked.
Well, it's another thing in the series that they kind of discuss, too.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, one of the things that makes the show so unique is, well, it's the way they kind of address like the power sets. In this world, they are called quirks. And the quirks are kind of like the... What's up?
I'm just thinking about on our last Young Justice coverage when we were talking about how they were like forcing the meta gene to come out in kids, and I was like, that's what started the My Hero first.
Yeah.
Like Young Justice was just a precursor to My Hero Academia.
Right. Karen Bumblebee.
Keeps making sense. Like the more we talk about it, I'm like, I find no flaw in this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great and funny comparison there. But it is the quirk, or if you want to call it metagene, is kind of the focal point of the series and this movie in particular, because I think it had been mentioned in the show kind of in passing. It was never like the biggest through line, but there is this theory out there that the natural evolution and the continuation of like quirks becoming more and more powerful and individuals being born, that's, you know, if two people with different quirks have an offspring, they're just going to create more and more powerful people with more and more powerful and unstable quirks. And basically it will end the world in what they call the quirk singularity doomsday theory.
Quirk doomsday theory.
Okay. So we've got this cult, this organization called Humorize that is basically taken this idea, and their goal to prevent the destruction of the world is to basically kill all the heroes, kill everyone with quirks, wipe out this quote unquote disease so that humanity can kind of start over and start with a clean slate. Yeah. And yeah, it's a pretty interesting story in that regard. And I felt the threat, and the leader of this organization is a guy named Fleck Turn, who has a quirk himself. And you kind of mentioned that with having these like all powerful villains, but his is basically just the ability to reflect any physical attack that is done to him. And they do try to have some like nice nuance there and give him some depth with the fact that it's the fact that he reflected everything. It's not just attacks. He was never able to feel anything, really made him feel disconnected and caused him to view his, you know, his quirk as a curse. So.
Yeah, the backstory was nice. If I had a Monday morning movie medic moment
mm-hmm.
with this, it would be that, again, I don't like overpowered villains.
Sure.
And what would have made more sense, we're going to spoiler talk.
Yeah.
What made more sense for me would have been if his powers had a limit and he was using a special suit that had the mirrors that enhanced it.
Okay.
Because then you have the objective of, like, he could have, Midoriya could have, like, powered up and used Black Whip to target the mirrors and overpower, like, each one okay. of them. And, like, work his way down to the villain. And then, you know, like, both of them are exhausted at that point. You could get a cooler sure. fight out of that. But the fact that it was just, like, I'm just invincible and I'm going to keep punching you as a distraction, like, that kind of took me away a little bit, you know? Because yeah. while this was happening, mm-hmm. Todoroki and Bakugo were having their own fights. Because it was like they went in three and then Bakugo took on two of the guys. Todoroki took on Sprue and then Midoriya kept moving. I was more True. Fascinated with the other two fights because it was actually head on.
Yeah.
And like, especially Bakugo's, like, I hated the laugh, but not because it was poorly done, because it was so well done that it made me cringe. It was one of sure. those things, right? Sure. So it was those villains. It's like, you're rooting for Bakugo, but like, you're really invested in how cool the villain is because you know it's the only time you're going to see them.
Certainly.
And it's twins, and then they get juiced up, so their quirk gets, like, overpowered, and Bakugo's, like, already... It's like, yeah, this is a fight. Oh, Todoroki's sure. was fun, but, like, Bakugo's fight was amazing. Despite yeah. him being, like, one of my favorite characters. Like, yeah, I'm a little biased in that, but, like... I was like, no, I don't want to watch Midoriya, like, bashing his head against a wall, because that's all that's happening right now.
Yeah, I agree with all those critiques, and it's kind of one of my biggest criticisms of the film as well. It's something that we've already seen in the series. I feel bad that I can't remember the name of the villain off the top of my head, but it was the villain that basically had taken the young girl with the horn on her head, and he had, like, kidnapped her.
And Overhaul?
Overhaul, yeah, yeah. So I felt like the fight was very similar, where Midoriya basically just had to, like, fight through the pain and keep just, like, pummeling them until he found their breaking point. And while I appreciate the aspect where it was told through dialogue, where Midoriya tells Flecturn, it's like, that was your problem. You gave up, you stopped trying. You could have, you know, found a way to, like, surpass your limits and found a way to feel something, and you didn't, you gave up. And that's the difference between you and me. I appreciate that aspect of it. But I kind of agree with you. I would have liked if he would have had to use more strategy or found a more inventive way to have to defeat him, especially with it being all based on reflection. In the back of my mind, I was thinking he was going to have to do something to manipulate light and, like, the refractions, and maybe yeah. find a way to, like,
something like that would have been cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was anticipating. But like I said, I did like the fact that, I mean, it's just driving home what Midoriya is all about. He's just, you know, he wants to be that hero that saves people no matter what, and with a smile on his face. And
yeah,
I guess they drive it so home so much so that he can be that example to the other main character. I mean, you brought up Bakugo and Todoroki, who I definitely want to get into, especially Bakugo. I mean, that you mentioned that fight, it was so bloody. He, like, got impaled multiple times, and I was just like, yeah. the amount of blood loss between him and Midoriya. I was like, how are these people still standing? Sure. But I feel like the other main character is this character of Roddy Soul. And, you know, apart from this conflict we have, the main part of the story is the relationship and the friendship that gets to be built between Roddy and Midoriya, Deku.
Is it not Rhodey?
Is it Rhodey? Maybe it is Rhodey. I just kept saying Roddy, but I think you're right. It is Rhodey, because I remember thinking in the theater, I was thinking War Machine for a second. But yeah.
I think I had that same mindset too, which is
okay.
Let's go with Rhodey. Rhodey sounds cool.
Yeah, I think it is Rhodey. Yeah. So, and then I guess that's the thing with the film being called World Heroes Mission. It usually all takes place in Japan, but this is them, you know, going out to various parts of the world, and we get to see another country, Otheon, which I'm not sure where that is supposed to be exactly.
It looked very Italy to me.
Yeah, I was gonna say I got kind of like Prague kind of vibes, like Central European, so we can go with Italy works for me. Yeah, I thought, you know, he was a good heart and soul for the story there, with his starting out as kind of a artful dodger, street urchin scamming people, but his constant exposure to somebody just so altruistic as Deco by the end there, he's able to be, you know, make the sacrifice and be a really good big brother.
And Prince Rodi, fabulous hero de Avathion.
Works for me. Works for me. Yeah. They set up that little like reveal where he told Midoriya that he had a quirk, but he didn't want him to laugh about it. And he tells him off camera, and then it comes back at the end of the movie. I will say that I saw that one coming from a mile away, but
you know why you saw it coming from a mile away? Because it was stretched out so flipping much for so long that, like, yeah, you had time to think of every scenario, go refill your popcorn, take a piss, come back, and still not know what happened.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't blame the jerks that was sitting in front of me for laughing as much as they were.
Mm.
It was just one of those things, like, know when to shut up, but, like... Sure. I mentioned in another cast, so I'm not going to go into that. You'll have to go listen to it to find out. but it was just... it's hard telling people to watch anime when they keep, like, repetitively doing the things that I don't like about it.
Sure.
And this being one of them where it's like... It was almost like a Snyder Man of Steel movie where it was, like, lots of action in the beginning, lots of action in the end, but just... such stretched out story in the middle, like,
sure
wow.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. There's like almost a whole entire section of the movie where it feels like a buddy road trip where you kind of forget that the villain is even in the picture at all. It's
buddy
just
roadie trip.
Yeah, roadie trip, there you go. Yeah, I don't disagree with any of those criticisms, but just to kind of flesh it out, his quirk ends up being he's got this little pink bird named Pino that's like always on his shoulder. And basically, while I describe him, you know, as an artful dodger, kind of a con man type character, while he's always doing his best to deceive the people around him about what his actual emotional state or intention is, this bird reveals what his true intentions and what his true character is. So. And it's actually revealed that his father, you know, that's part of his character development. He feels pretty jaded against his father because his father was like a part of Humor Rise and got his whole family like ostracized from the community that they lived in for being a part of it. But you get to learn that his dad actually made the ultimate sacrifice to try and create a failsafe to save all the heroes. And that we haven't, I don't think we've done it proper justice, but basically I kind of alluded to it, but Humor Rise, they've set up these bombs with this trigger gas all around the world. And when these bombs go off, they cause people with quirks it basically overactivates their quirk to the point that they die. So anybody that's familiar with the Inhuman, sorry to bring that up, but the Terrigen Mist, it's kind of like the opposite of the Terrigen Mists, where instead of bringing out the latent gene, it kills anybody with the latent gene. And spares all the humans.
And that's another season 5 thing where there actually is a juice that's like amping up their powers.
Okay, I think it may have been alluded to as early as season 4 because it's not entirely unfamiliar to me. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That was another part of it. And I know I've been saying like a lot of negative things, but like the story, sure, the Pino thing was pretty cool. It was really cute, like when Midoriya was leaving at the end and he was trying to keep on a brave face, but Pino was crying. I was like, aww.
You should probably stay in Japan.
The story with his dad, like, yes, it was very Rogue One, but I also didn't see it coming.
Okay.
Like, I because of like how strong of the cult vibe they were going into, I thought his hatred for heroes hatred for whoever actually was because his dad left him. So I was like, oh man, that's pretty harsh. So when they threw that in there, like it actually was uplifting. And I really liked when Humor Eyes, whatever the villain's name was.
Fleck Turn was the main guy. I can't tell you any of like the lackeys. They were cool, but I don't know any of their names.
Yeah. So when Flecktron actually said, like, you know what? Yeah, like, I'll put on a timer to give them a chance. Like, seeing the montage of the heroes, like, actually interacting with Humorize, and they have people with quirks too, so they're struggling and fighting, and Midoriya's dialogue of, like, even if they know that they can't win, like, they're gonna keep trying, they're gonna keep fighting, like, stuff like that is it is the heart of My Hero Academia. It's that ability to inspire through dialogue and lead by example and be a hero and do the right thing and don't quit no matter, like, how difficult the situation is. Like, the emotional effect that these characters are able to have is such a beautiful thing. So it disappoints me that instead of making it a sequence that kept going within 40 minutes, it stretched out over this, like, 105 minutes, and just it kind of shot themselves in the foot, because those good moments were really good moments, but
sure,
the fact it took so much nap time to get to it was what was frustrating about it.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair. I do think pacing was a little bit of an issue, and things were stretched out more than they should have been. But I did want to bring up some of the animation. Like, we talked about some of the action sequences, primarily Bakugo getting to face those really cool twins. But on the other side of things, I thought Todoroki, not necessarily the villain he fought, but the showcasing of his ice powers. We've seen his ice powers a lot in the show, but I felt they did a completely different twist on it this time, with, like, getting to see, like, crystalline, like, ice formatures, like, jutting out, like, at you at the screen, and you're making a face like you know something that you don't want to tell me.
Season 5.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. You did bring up just some of the lackeys that were causing them trouble along the way, and I think about that one woman archer who was able to, like, basically fire the arrow. Yeah, I thought
cool.
I thought she was super cool too, and the effect that they always used around the arrow reminded me very much of, like, Midoriya's own power set, and I was kind of wondering if there was going to be a little bit of a connection there, but there doesn't need to be. But
nah.
I like, yeah. Other than that, one of the biggest laughs I got is when Rhodey and Deku were on top of the bus and they were arguing about whether or not to pay for the fare. And then Asuka did the Delaware smash to put the two coins in. And
it's like,
then,
all right, we paid for two people. It's like, we're still sitting on top of the bus.
Well, yeah. And then I did like the recurring joke with Bakugo. Like, every time Todoroki told him to do something, it's like, don't tell me what to do. But then he went ahead and did it.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yep, I was laughing so hard at Bakugo in the theater. Just,
yeah,
he's something else.
Yeah,
I'm never typically attracted to the Hot Rod character, but I just can't get over his, because, like, with how cocky he is and how powerful he is, he has those moments, those emotional moments where he has his breakdowns.
Sure.
Or, like, you get it's what I appreciate about Inosuke and Demon Slayer too. It's they're very, like, hard-headed on the outside, boarhead or not. But, like, when it really comes down to it and they have their weak moments, like, they really dwell into that in the story. And that was another one with him. It's like, because you've seen him enough in those difficult situations that when he did get to, like, near-death situations, it's like, you worry about, you know he's going to pull through, but you worry about him too, because, like, that's something that could linger on.
Yeah. It's tough not to compare him to, like, a character like Vegeta, but, and as celebrated as Dragon Ball Z and Vegeta are, I feel like this show, like, what you mentioned, that pride and that dedication to, like, always wanting to excel and be the best, like, I feel like they just do such a great job exploring, like, kind of the some of his shortcomings as well, and just the inadequacy that he feels, and, like, why he is the way that he is. Like, even in season 4, it hasn't all been spelled out for me, but just some of those small flashbacks to their childhood and whatnot, and getting to see even how much of a cut from the same cloth he is as his mother, just in terms of being, you know, flying off the handle and telling you how they really feel. But yeah, he's a great character, and all the characters are so great, and they get such rich development. But what I was going to say is you have to have a character like him when Izuku is always as altruistic and just good natured as he is. You have to kind of have the counterbalance to that. And I'm glad they do.
Yeah.
We didn't get a lot of All Might. All Might was definitely on the sidelines, but it's nice to see, you know, him rooting Midoriya on and Midoriya really come on and come into his own. But what little performance we got from Chris Sabat was great. Young man, you too can become a hero.
I actually watched the Japanese version.
Oh, did you? Okay. We should have clarified that at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. So I watched Japanese. You watched English.
You did it the quote unquote real fan way.
The timings were very limited on both. And yes. It was one of those things that my friend that I was supposed to go with, like, hates the dub. So he was you want to watch it in Japanese, right? I was like, I'm fine with either. I actually like the voices for both of them quite a bit.
Yeah. I will say I've watched a few. I haven't watched as many as you, obviously, but I've watched a few different anime series, and some are better than others in terms of the dub. But I've been really impressed with all four seasons that I've watched, and this movie included. I think, you know, the entire English class voice cast does a great job. Justin Briner doing Izuku, holding his own as always. Chris Sabat doing All Might that I mentioned. And then the newcomer there for Rhodey was Ryan Colt Levy doing the voice of Rhodey, and then Pino, got to give a shout out to Pino, was Christina Lee.
V.
Christina V, you're correct. Thank you. I can't read my own handwriting. My V looks like
I just happen to have it up on the... Gotta keep my Wikipedia pages open more often. Saving me a little bit. Yeah, the only thing that... So, Dragon Ball Z, I can't watch Japanese. I refuse. Okay. I hate that. I just hate Goku's voice so much.
Mm-hmm.
I watched English Dragon Ball or Japanese. Midoriya and Zenitsu. The screaming just drives me up the wall. I hate it so much. It's so overdone.
That's interesting to hear about Zenitsu particularly, because even his English one I feel like is already over the top. So.
Yeah, I can't stand it on either. Hi, I'm playing Nezuko. The demon. Jesus. I'm playing the Demon Slayer game right now too.
Oh, nice.
Every time I have to play as Zenitsu, and like it's like skip, stop talking, please, you whiny little
Yeah, that's understandable.
The show, I'm fine with both. I like either of them.
Yeah, I did watch Squid Game, and that was one of those ones. It's not animated, obviously, but it had the option between the original Korean, South Korean, or you could listen to the English dub. And that was one of those ones, like, it was automatically set up for English dub, and I watched like five seconds of that, and I was like, no, we're going back to the Korean right now.
I'm assuming you did the same thing I did, because the opening scene of that show is it explaining what the Squid Game is.
Right,
so nobody's lips are moving. So you have English, and you're just watching it. And as soon as you watch people's mouths, it was like,
Exactly.
Back.
That's exactly how it went down. Yeah. Well, as we're, you know, going off on tangents now and winding down, I did want to bring up the how successful the movie was in its opening weekend here in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
It had an opening of $6.4 million, which might not sound like a huge number, but it was number four at the box office, which is pretty huge, especially when you have tentpole releases like Eternals and Dune still in theaters right now. So very, very impressive, and it makes me excited for just how casual audiences are becoming more and more accepting of not just animated content, but anime as well as, you know, stuff from Eastern culture. So really encouraging.
We should watch the first movie together.
Curious to see your
reaction to it.
And then I know, when was that that Injustice movie? That just, I think it was released on October 19th, so it's been out for a little while, but I definitely have interest in that. That's the one where, 2021. What's up?
Ooh, that's an interesting description.
Yeah, I love the Injustice games. I haven't read any of the comics, but just the games alone do a great job of encapsulating the story, and it's pretty riveting stuff. So,
yeah, I'm not going to read it out loud in case people are like me and want to go in as blind as possible, but that's
very good.
Intriguing. I want to watch that.
Cool.
One thing from season 5, the opening arc is basically class 1A versus class 1B.
Ooh.
And their mission is they're randomly organized into groups of 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And they're put in this thing, and it's like, you have to like capture as many of the other people as you can. But because we haven't seen B in a while, like we haven't seen like how much they've been training and how much they've been upping their skills.
Okay.
So you get to see a lot of what they've been doing and a lot of class 1A has been doing and how they've been working together and displaying their skills. It was quite the flex on everybody. So the fact that we got to see that and then see them on these missions working with the heroes that we see more on a regular basis, like knowing what improvements our guys and that B have made and being able to see little tidbits of that in this was really cool. It was very satisfying.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to remember because they were really only like featured in like the montages where we got to see like the various members of class 1A, like you mentioned. But the one member of class 1B whose name I can remember just because it's Tetsu. And he's basically the counterpart to,
Red Riot.
I can't think of his real name. I want to say,
Kirishima.
I think it's Kirishima. But yeah.
Yep.
You know.
Kirishima.
Yeah, Red Riot, where they're basically just counterparts of each other. They can harden their skin into one metal or the other, and then they have like the weird metallic jaw fixtures.
Yeah. Yeah, both of them are really cool. I love how competitive they are.
Yeah, yeah.
It was nice like knowing how much that both the teams have improved and the new abilities that they come up with. Like, I don't know if you noticed that like Tokoyami could actually fly now. So they go into that a little bit.
He was flying alongside Hawks, as I recall. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So he's part of his agency, and they go into like how he learned how to fly and how other people like develop new powers or like amped up their powers. And that's, I was about to say too much. That was a cool setting that like if you watch the season, you were already filled in on all that.
Okay.
Which was the tricky thing about when the second movie came out was that it came out before season 4 ended.
Mm.
And there was stuff in the movie that hadn't happened yet.
Ew.
And it wasn't too spoilery, but it was enough to make you just go, wait, what? When did that happen? I'm sure the manga readers got it, but as you know, I could barely read a text message, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the success of this movie, I imagine there are more on the way, and hopefully they get the dub version of season 5 done sooner rather than later so I can get current.
I should have said my one negative before I pulled in that cool tie into season 5.
Oh, you're good.
So my one negative is that I absolutely loved the suits they were wearing in the opening, and it really bums me out that that's not canon. Because they look amazing and they match so well and they look so cool for all three of them.
Yeah.
And that was all we ever get to see.
Very true. Very true.
It was the money shot. I'm thinking like, oh, they're gonna make Funkos off of this, it's gonna look so sweet, I'm gonna get a cool poster. That's the only time I'm seeing it. No, I'm good. you just lost a bunch of merchandising stuff off of me.
they could make another appearance. You never know. But that was the money shot. Yeah.
Yeah. Looked really cool.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I have anything else to say on this one. I definitely had a good time in the theater and had a good time talking about it. So we do have Young Justice season 4. I know it's kind of, I feel a little bad that I have got ahead of you in terms of having watched parts of season 4. Well, I know you're still waiting to. But definitely excited to talk about that one as soon as possible.
Yeah,
first five episodes are out.
I think when we record, there's going to be a new episode that comes out, so we might be able to knock out like six at the same time.
Oh, sweet. Very good. And we'll have Andrew Rogers join us for that. So
yes. I know he's very excited. Haley Hobbs continues to message me every week.
Oh, we'll have her on soon. Yeah, we'll have a lot of people on.
She's like, so have you watched any yet? I was like, I can now.
Well, I'll have to reach out to her so she can let me know what she's thinking. But yeah, we'll have her on. John Irons, I mentioned, he's definitely expressed some interest there. And then I've also been, slowly but surely working on my rewatch of Cowboy Bebop in preparation for the live action series on Netflix.
As so have I.
Very good, very good. We
Am
will
I
do our.
Through? I think I'm
okay.
Through.
Cool, cool. Well, we will do our primer episode, and I'm pretty sure Brian V. Klein, Haley's co-host on Source Pages, will join us for that one. So you can stay tuned for all that stuff. And I shouldn't say stay tuned. I should say keep tuning in. That's TOONIN.
We're overwhelmed right now, but you all stay whelmed.
Don't get ejected.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SPChat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.